everybody. This is Robin Ayu from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. This episode will be 153, I think, or 54. I lost count now. And I'm sure somebody will correct me at the end of this video, which is, that's always, you know, good to correct the host. That's not a big deal. We always do that. Today, I have the distinct honor and pleasure to have with me Minesh Mohangupta. And Dinesh, is known as the money saver. I'm reading his LinkedIn profile. His first name is Dinesh, in parentheses, the money saver, and then the last name. So I can't wait to dig into your story, Dinesh. I really appreciate you being with me this afternoon. Thank you for coming on to the podcast.
Hey, Robin, thank you so much for inviting me. And, you know, what a way to start 2026, right? It's an amazing opportunity to, you know, meet you and your audience and talk about, you know, how we can help people, you know, save money and add value. You're right. You know, my LinkedIn profile, it says money saver, but I call myself a profit keeper for businesses. So what I essentially do is ensure businesses keep more profit to themselves by ensuring they're not overpaying for their vendor services like telephone bills, waste pickup, uniforms, shipping, fuel purchases, facility supplies, office supplies, compressed gases, and so on. So it's a very unique model, and it's a risk-free model. We don't charge any fees or any upfront fees or any retainer. All we come and do is audit your contracts, audit your invoices, find out inefficiencies, plug in leakages, and also try to secure certain better pricing and contracts with the existing vendors most of the time, and help you find money, you know, which has already been spent by you, but put it back into your bottom line.
So you are the doge of money saving or cost cutting in an enterprise environment. Well, you know what we say on this channel there, Dinesh, everybody's got a story. So let's start from the beginning. What's your story?
You know, I've been a sales guy all along for 22 years.
Wow, that's big, man. I got to dig into that. You go from sales to cost cutting? Man.
Yeah. You know, though I've been in sales, if you look at my last 15 years of experience was in the lubricants industry, mostly catering to manufacturing companies, logistics companies, and so on. And in the lubricants world, and especially in the manufacturing, you don't just go and say, okay, I have this gear oil, I have this hydraulic oil, do you want to buy? It doesn't work that way. Nobody buys. They have a process in place. They have a lot of, you know, constraints. They have a lot of productivity requirements and things like that. So what essentially I do is go and first identify what they are doing, what's their pain points, and how can I help them? How can I increase their productivity at the same time lowering the cost? So I always used to talk TCO, total cost of ownership. So though I was a salesman, cost was something, you know, what I was talking to them. How can I help you to reduce your cost, increase your productivity, right? I was a more of a solution seller, not just like, you know, selling whatever I could. There's no horse in the race, right? So from that point, I thought, okay, if this is the route I'm doing and if I'm adding value, how can I, you know, make it better? And then I came to Canada as an immigrant in 2018. And I have seen how the entire dynamics have changed in the last 7 years, right? Things have gone, you know, for various reasons, for not to, you know, blame anybody or pinpoint anybody, but things have become expensive and people are struggling to, you know, pay their bills. And there are always opportunities where companies don't have that capability or expertise to, you know, do certain things. And that's where I thought, let me start something on my own. But at the same time, I don't want to go into a traditional selling. Okay, I have a product. Do you want to buy? How can my products or service can add value, right? So that's where I came across this company, Schooley Mitchell, and they had a beautiful, you know, concept and, you know, methodology. So it resonated well with me. And I said, let's try it. Let me ask you a question. When somebody tries to sell you, what happens?
Yeah, it's just there's many things that happens, you know, which specific thing that you're looking for. You know, when somebody's trying to sell me things, first, I want to know what is it they're selling. Second, exactly. Is I want to know what is the impact on my business if they're selling me something that impacts my business or personal life. And I want to see I want to know what are the benefits, short term, long term, etc. And what's the impact around me when I, you know, for other things that I do, if I introduce a service or.
Exactly, Robin. Those are well said points, but also added to that is, in a sales transaction, always people think somebody wins, somebody loses, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, people try to create the win-win situation everywhere, but You know, it's hardly the case in some cases. You know, I don't want to paint everybody in the same brush, but most people would try, I mean, successful one will try to create a win-win scenario in a selling situation. As we see around the world, as we see the economies around the world flat to down, people are trying various methods to sell things because not everybody is open to new sales propositions nowadays. You got to try harder. As you mentioned earlier, value. We talk a lot about value. You missed, I know I invited you. I'm not sure if you had a chance to take a look at it, but next week we're having the same conversation if you want to join us. It's a Friday morning networking event. We talked a lot about creating value today. And there was a few people on the call. There's about 12 people. That's the AI exchange networking event that I host on Fridays. And we talked a lot about value. And the people need to see value in either in the services they currently have, they're currently buying. They need to see value in it to keep it. Or if they're thinking about acquiring a new product, service, etc., they need to see value in this. And if you don't see value, I mean, I don't know how that, but, you know, and this is a question for you, I guess, you know, where do owners now and executives in companies get this wrong? Because they're treating cost as, you know, just a cost. I mean, it's a cost of doing business. But how do they shift that and turn it around, you know, using you and Dinesh and Iskooli Mitchell method to take a look at it from a different angle, to think about it from a different angle?
I think you brought a very valid point and a beautiful point, which many business owners, you know, miss to, you know, look at it. So I would like to tackle this in a two-stage approach. The first thing is I would like to, you know, give certain insights about cost. And then I will also talk about how businesses can, you know, relook at, you know, this cost. So this is a research done by Gartner across many businesses in US, and they published a report. And as per their findings, what they say is a 5% reduction in cost has a same impact to their bottom line as a 30% increase in sales revenue can bring to their bottom line. And being an industry veteran, you would definitely understand how difficult it is to, you know, increase your revenue by 30%, right? It doesn't happen overnight. And then for you to increase your 30% revenue, there are a lot of associated costs, right? You need to bring in more resources. You need to bring in more salespeople, more marketing budget, more spend, and then you get it, right?
That's right. And there's investment upfront.
Exactly. And is it sustainable? Can you sustain the sales increase forever?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Businesses go through cycles, right? They have a cycle that's their growth cycle, their flat cycle, there's down cycle.
Exactly. But when you look at saving cost, that's a straight ROI which goes into your bottom line. If I save you 5%, that's 5% money straight away available without any additional spend. And saving cost can be a sustainable way. You can definitely sustain those cost savings over a longer period of time. So that is the beauty what cost savings can impact to any business and to their bottom line. But many people don't realize the power what, you know, this can bring in. So that is the first perspective I want to give. Now, second thing, when you go and talk to businesses about cost savings, they probably feel about, are we cutting, you know, certain things? Are we, you know, curtailing certain expenses? Are we eliminating certain things? But they have to understand it's a different mindset what they have to bring. It's a redistribution mindset what we are talking about. We are taking away inefficiencies and finding some money, and we are redistributing that money towards growth, you know, activities or strategic activities. So today, if I come and save a business another $100,000, which was not there, they were anyway spending that money on something else. Now, we come and do our audits and, you know, plug in those inefficiencies and take that money. Now they have $100,000, which is a found money, which was already they were spending. Now, rather than spending on their inefficient categories, they can put this money on strategic initiatives like, okay, can I bring in more, you know, salespeople using this? Can I put it on more marketing to, you know, just create my visibility? Or can I use this in product development and try to, you know, bring innovative products? Think about the multiplier effect what this can bring in, right?
Or invest it.
Exactly. So that is what a cost savings can bring to the business, and that is how businesses have to, you know, look at you know, cost savings and what benefit it can bring to the business.
Absolutely. No, thanks. Thanks for that answer. That's pretty good. You must be really busy. Like, I mean, from what I'm hearing, everybody's struggling in that area. Everybody's trying to find, how do I find efficiencies? Because again, when times are good, nobody cares. Times are good. Revenue is up. Sales are up. Revenue cures all illnesses, I guess. That's what people say nowadays. But that's hardly the case nowadays. I mean, if you look around, most people are not really living the high life. I'm talking about the business people, like the owners of companies or the stockholders, et cetera, the shareholders, because they're looking at economies that they're probably flat to down. And that's generated by the collective number of enterprises. Economies are made up of enterprises in the country. So when we look at all this and we say, okay, well, you must be busy like crazy. Companies are calling you left, right, and center. Hey, come and save me some money. Is that the case or no?
Yes and no, I would say. Because one thing, you know, what we have seen is a lot of people don't understand a business model like ours exists and a company like ours exists, right? And there are a lot of, you know, other people who provide consulting and things like that. But what they are doing is completely different from what we do. One common thing what I get a response from my customers after I do my analysis and show them value and save the money, where were you these guys all these years? Or they would say, oh, I should have found you 5 years back, 10 years back, and then I could have saved, you know, a lot, even a lot more money, right? So businesses are not aware, like, experts like us are there out in the field. And sometimes, you know, they might have questions like, what do you get by saving money? What is in it for you? Or they'll say, oh, I'm already good. I have my internal teams already taking care of it. I have long vendor relationship, so I don't need you, right? But people get it wrong because cost savings, when you look at cost savings, bargaining is just one aspect of it. There are people who are smart. I'm not saying like we are the only company who are super smart and, you know, we can get things done, right? There are very smart people. There are people who have fantastic rates and, you know, they are able to negotiate rates which they enjoy. But where the difference comes is sustainability. Again, I would like to give some statistics. When a company thinks about cost savings, what we have seen is 43% of the companies are very successful saving money in the first year itself. But when you look at year two and year three, there are only 11% who are able to sustain those savings.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yeah, why?
Because they think cost savings is a one-time activity. So they just go do their bargains, do their renegotiations, and they think they are good. And they just take the pedal out and they look elsewhere, right? And the second thing is they have core businesses to run. Cost savings is not their core activity, isn't it? You're a manufacturing company. You will be looking at, you know, what new products can I bring? How can I buy better raw materials? And, you know, what other production mechanisms can I bring in to, you know, increase my productivity, right? So the sustainability aspect goes out of it. The biggest benefit what we bring in is we can ensure that your cost savings are sustainable for 3 years, 5 years, you know, 10 years. That's the value what, you know, you get because we do only this.
So you look for a long-term arrangement, Dinesh, right?
Yes, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Now, one more question. How does this work? I've done business with many multiple large organizations around here, and there is a pattern, like, and especially on the procurement department, right? So there's various procurement managers for various category of purchasing, et cetera. That's the normal structure in any company. And the normal compensation plan for procurement agent is that, or procurement manager is, it's directly tied in to the cost saving that they would give them as an objective on a portfolio of purchase. How does that work in your world? Like, do you get involved in that, or is yours an addition to what the procurement agent, does the procurement agent get it wrong? Is that the idea?
So again, you brought a very beautiful point, which many people think it as a threat, especially the procurement, you know, divisions. Most other people think, oh, these guys are coming to replace my job or replace my thing or find fault with what I've done. No, we absolutely don't, you know, replace any internal teams. Rather, we complement what they are doing. As I initially said, people are very smart. And, you know, companies who have procurement teams, I'm sure they have efficient procurement managers who bargain to the last drop and ensure that they get the best deal out, you know, for them. Where we do is we complement their activities and we provide certain additional value by giving some specialized knowledge, which they may not have. Now, a typical procurement manager, you know, let's say if he's in a senior position, he would have had 20 years of experience working in 5-6 different companies, right? And probably dealt with 30, 40 or maximum 100 vendors. And he might have access to another 50, 60 companies where he tries to, you know, benchmark, you know, certain things and ensure, you know, if the price is right. What we are doing is broadening that scope. We've been in business for 25 years, dealt with 35,000 plus customers, and we have dealt with 4,700 vendors. So all I'm bringing is broadening the perspective and broadening the scope, what he already has got. So he has already done certain things, and I'm just trying to add more strategic value and bring, you know, certain specialized knowledge. So we just complement, and we are like an extended team. And again, to the point of sustainability, procurement managers do their job and they hop on to the next thing because they have various other things to do. But I continue to keep monitoring their expenditures, audit their spends, audit their invoices. And it's like a daily watch what we are doing in the market, which teams cannot do because that's not their job, right? So that's the additional value what we bring into the business.
So, you know, this is the, for, I mean, this is the dilemma of professional services from the outside, right? It doesn't matter if you're in a cost-saving business or recruiting business or translation business or marketing, it doesn't matter. Anytime we're mentioning professional services being sold to an enterprise, there's that, I want to say, fear on the inside of an organization that these guys got to be replacing me, right? And automatically goes into their mind. Like if you're talking about marketing, you're talking about, we just earlier, we're talking about recruiting services where the recruiter thinks, oh, they're going to replace me. No, we're just going to compliment you, make you look better, make you look good. For your boss, whoever is monitoring this, we're going to help you achieve your goal a lot faster. How's that sound to you? So I think this is where you're going with this.
Exactly, Robin. We, again, you touched a very good point. We usually talk about four pillars of business, you know, what the business or a person is going to get out of us. The first thing is they are going to get back a lot of time. They can invest their time on strategic high value activities and leave these non-recurring, you know, non-core activities to us. So we get them back their time. And you know how much valuable time is for these professionals, right? Second, by doing our activity, we are generating cash. We are giving them money back into their bottom line. The third one, what I'm trying to help them is by giving them knowledge, because we are not only, you know, doing our job, but we are also ensuring that how we do it and what we do it. And definitely, you know, they take back a lot of, you know, knowledge, you know, from them as, right? And last thing is what they get is security, because now we are their vendor watchdogs and he has a peace of mind knowing that somebody is watching the market on his behalf on a daily basis. So he has, you know, the better deals. He's not losing money and his expenses are always optimized, right? What better thing, you know, can a business get out of it?
That's right. Instead of signing, let's say, a five-year contract and you're locked into five-year contract and then the market shifts on you and then you can't really test the market until that contract is finished, what you're suggesting is an agile purchasing platforms.
Exactly. Now, so it's like market keeps changing on a daily basis. What was good 6 months is not good today, right?
That's right. Yeah. And you always got to find the most optimal position to be in. Quality, cost, etc., and availability. And if you're talking manufacturing, sometimes availability becomes a constraint too. Are these material available? Yes or no. Now, from a cost optimization, and to properly talk about cost optimization from a definition perspective, I don't think it's austerity. I don't think it's layoff, and I don't think it's, you know, anything that has to do with cutting of internal staff, etc. So what is the real definition in your mind from a cost optimization perspective? Because you're not really promoting the idea of laying off internal staff.
So that's, again, a very good question and perspective to, you know, look at it. So what we are essentially making these businesses is going from an austerity point into a strategic value add point is what, you know, we try to, you know, bring in. Like when you look at it, if you are cutting, let's say, resources, it's a short-term approach what businesses take. Because today, let's say you have 10 resources and you are cutting it by 5 resources, what happens is there is definitely going to be a little bit, you know, effect on your, you know, progress, quality and things like that, right? And you are actually, you know, defining the business a long-term benefit, you know, what it could benefit out of it. But what we essentially are doing is we are just coming and auditing certain things and finding those inefficiencies, plugging those leakages, right? So we are not depriving any resources or anything to any of the departments or any of the processes or any of the categories, you know, where they are spending money. All we are bringing is the efficiency point, you know, which saves money, and now they have that money to, you know, put it back into the business. I can give you tons of examples where we went and did our thing, and then the owners came back and said, hey, you saved us from laying off, you know, 5 people or 10 people. We had a not-for-profit where we helped them save a bunch of money. And I know the director came back and said, you know, Dinesh, the money what you saved us is equivalent to going and finding 60 new donors for us. Now,
that's very impressive. I'm assuming like nonprofit companies or organization would love you guys. And because, you know, money is hard to come by, donors, etc. And they're not selling anything. They're begging for money, basically.
Exactly. So that found money, they know the value, you know, what, you know, this can, you know, do it for them, right? So it's as simple as that. Similarly, like, you know, in manufacturing companies, you save them $200,000-$300,000. It's equivalent to, you know, not, you know, sending 5 or 6 people out, you know, laying off and, you know, sending them back home, right? So they tend to keep the resources. So they are still, you know, continuing the long-term perspective. They still have the, you know, ammunition to, you know, continue their thing. But at the same time, now they have some money to even support all those things. So it is a double-edged benefit what we can bring into the businesses.
Let's talk about the hidden leaks in costs, right? So there are, you know, companies, general companies, up to small, medium, large kind of companies. They all have many contracts with many suppliers. It doesn't matter. Even me, like at a consultancy level, like one individual, you know, I'm noticing leaks now. I mean, I'm assuming companies that are larger number of vendors, they must have those leaks. So what is the fastest diagnostics that you can run to find waste without boiling the ocean, without taking a look at 1,000 contracts? How do you get a snapshot immediately and ASAP sort of get the sense if there is leaks or not?
Let me give you an example with a category where we look into it. Waste is one of the category where it's been very, very successful, and it's a quick turnaround, you know, thing for us. Like companies who even hesitate to, you know, engage us, we would say, hey, can we look at your garbage and help you save some money there? Everybody thinks, oh, what can you find in my garbage? Okay, here is my thing, take it. So what we do is we take their copy of the contract, we take their invoices, but we have industry experts who would observe, you know, their waste pickup patterns, how many days a week, you know, these vendors are coming to, you know, pick up, and, you know, what kind of, you know, charges are being, you know, done. Now, people think, okay, I've negotiated a good rate for per pickup rate, and that's it. I don't need to be worried. But the buck doesn't stop there. You can look at things like, can I optimize their frequency? Rather than having a small bin and having 3 times a week or 2 times a week pickup, can I go to a bigger bin size and, you know, reduce my pickup frequency to once a week or once every 2 weeks? Now that straight away saves money back to them, right? At the same time, they're not compromising anything on their existing thing. Their waste still gets picked up, but we are looking at an efficient way of doing things, right?
Just a different way of looking at the services that are currently being provided, but a different way of providing them.
Exactly. Now, if you look at in this example, we are not removing anything. We are not changing his vendors. But just by doing certain tweaks based on our expertise, we are helping them save money.
Absolutely.
That sounds pretty simple, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now, in vendor contracts terms, I mean, I've been involved in putting those together like 1,000 times probably of my career. Where do business get trapped? I mean, I've seen auto renewals. I've seen minimums associated with the services being provided. Rate escalators, I've seen those. I've seen bundling, you know, bundling you save or bundling you increase. I don't know. Depends on the contracts. Do you take a look at the actual contracts in comparison to the services and see if there's a miss?
Yes, that's exactly the first thing what we do. Because when you look at the contract, sometimes when you ask a copy of the contract, you will get surprised. Like I have my own customer where I asked his uniform contracts. They found one. And when they found one, it was something signed 15 years back. Can you imagine?
75 years back?
15 years back.
Oh, 15 years back. Okay.
Still, it's a long time. Some CFO signed, he left. There were a lot more changes, and nobody even, you know, bothered to, you know, go and look at, you know, what they had signed. So when we took that copy, it was completely irrelevant to what, you know, they've been getting billed right now. So this will reveal a lot of surprises to business. And as you rightly pointed out, we do a deep dive looking at, okay, what is the per pickup or, you know, per delivery price? We look at escalators, we look at inflation caps, we look at, you know, auto renewal things. These are something, you know, where businesses miss, especially if you look at categories like waste and uniforms. It's always a 5-year contract, 3-year contract. People don't have time to remember these dates, right? And you have to give a 90-day notice if you want to stop the auto renewal. Most people miss it. And then you are again locked into another 5-year contract at their terms and conditions. And if you want to come out, there is hefty penalties and things like that. So you said, forget it, let me keep paying it, right?
I didn't know there were such terms on contracts. If you don't notify me within 90 days, you auto-renew?
Yes.
No way. Seriously?
Yes, 100%.
Well, you know, most of the contracts are here. This is important, man. I mean, to the audience, I mean, if you can include that in your contracts, imagine what happened to your customer retention. Customer retention must go through the roof.
Exactly.
They hate you, but they don't want to leave because you've put a lot of constraint on them.
Exactly.
Wow. So usage data, sometimes when you go into these companies and you try to get at the truth, it's always messy. I mean, especially the large companies, try to get at the usage data. Like, how do you get the truth fast? Like, is that a system thing? Is that open the drawer in the desk, show me the invoices? How do you do it?
So we have certain proprietary systems, what we have developed, which helps us to, you know, identify all these data points much quicker. It's not like somebody can't do it. People can do it. But the quantum of time which takes them for them to identify these things takes a longer period of time, whereas we can just do it within, you know, a few hours and minutes, especially, let's say, uniforms. You have a usage report which comes every 2 weeks, but you have an invoice which goes every week, and nobody is even comparing. Or many people are not comparing if these two match up at all, because there is always a lead lag. There could be, you know, ghost inventories, there could be, you know, unwanted billing and things like that, undelivered items getting billed because everything is just going on an auto system. It's for nobody's fault. It's all based on certain systems, and people don't have time to intervene and check, you know, those things. So this is where we have people who can catch all these anomalies, and then this will give them money back to them.
Now, there is something called red flags, and every business has them. And I'm assuming in your world also you have them. How do you spot red flags immediately?
It just comes out of the experience, because this is what we keep doing day in and day out. So today, when I look at, let's say, credit card processing,
what are the red flags? I mean, you must have like some sort of a mechanism. I mean, you name them probably, right? So you have probably been doing this for a while, so you understand what the red flag is. So what are these red flags?
See, again, we consult on 14 different categories. So the red flags probably differ from, you know, category to category, right? In telephone, we find a lot of roaming charges, but they don't have North America wide plan, which could, you know, help them to, you know, save all those things. It's a red flag. They could have easily transitioned to a different plan and, you know, save money, right? Similarly, when we ask about like contracts, how long was the contract signed? And like, do you have a copy of the contract? When they say, no, I don't even know if there is a contract, that's a clear red flag, because now they don't even know what's going on, right? So it's few questions will help us to understand if there is opportunity for us to, you know, go and help them optimize their things. It need not take so complicated things to understand. So it's pretty easy for us to, you know, do it. And out of experience, we have seen 35,000 plus customers under our belt. So for us, it's easy to, you know, look at the patterns and look at the things and, you know, pick up those, you know, red flags for businesses.
And plus, you said initially when we started the conversation, there is no cost to the customer to get your services. You make your money off the savings. Am I getting this correct?
Exactly, Robin. Yeah, there is absolutely no, you know, cost to look at our service. Like, there is no upfront cost. There is no retainer. It's a pretty simple model. We come, we audit. If we find savings, we take a percentage of the savings as our fee. And if we don't find any savings, you will not get charged even a single dollar. No, you walk away with a free audit. So it's pretty risk-free for any business to look at our service.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you try to build long-term partnerships with these customers, and you try to put a governance programs together to manage the ongoing findings and the fine-tuning, because obviously you don't want to do this every 2-3 years. You want to continuously do this on a weekly, monthly basis, and it doesn't matter how you put it together. So what is the right governance cadence? monthly cost reviews, quarterly vendor resets, annual zero-based? How do you do that? What kind of program do you put in place to govern these things?
So if they take us in, our cadence is like we keep watching the market on a daily basis because we have 35,000 plus customers and then adding new customers on a daily basis, right? We process thousands of invoices. So we are always ahead of the curve. What takes 3 months, 12 months for a company to identify a pattern, we can just quickly identify within few days and then, you know, bring it to their attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the cadence, like what a company should be doing, the ideal thing is watching the market on a daily basis, but they don't have time or they don't have the expertise or they don't feel the need to do it because they have time locked in for strategic priorities. So that's where I can add value by, you know, keeping a watch on a daily basis. For example, we had a manufacturing company with 86 locations. We saved them more than $300,000 on their small package shipping. We negotiated a better rate and we, you know, plugged in certain inefficiencies and we got them those savings. 4 months into implementation, we found an additional 60,000 savings possibility because of, you know, certain dynamics changes in the marketplace. So we brought in to them and said, hey, you have another $60,000. Do you want to take it? Guess what? They didn't say no. Yes, they said, yes, we want these additional savings. And now instead of a $300,000, the savings become $360,000. That's because of the model of what we are looking at, how we, you know, take it forward and the visibility what we have. Any change, we quickly, you know, get those changes. And then we have systems which can say, hey, which customer can benefit from these changes? And let's just go and talk to them and see if they want to implement the additional savings and stay optimized.
How do you, I guess that's the question when it comes to cost savings. Everybody asks that question, at least that's on my mind when it comes to cost savings, is there is a delicate balance between quality and cost savings. And on any level, if you're selling products, services, whatever you're consuming as a business, you are going to have that conversation because you can push the cost savings to a point where cost saving becomes sacrifice on behalf of the quality, right? And specifically on the professional services or even on the product side. You know, there's that delicate balance between the price that you pay for to acquire product and services and the quality that you obtain, that it's equate to the price. How do you balance that? How do you measure that quality versus price?
In fact, I would say you don't need to compromise on the quality aspect at all. Because as I said, we are not doing any austerity measure here. We are not shaving off anything or cutting any of the services or things what they need. We are just looking at redistributing certain things in an efficient way. When you talk about efficiency, we are just looking at plugging in leakages, right? We're not looking at, you know, drastically changing any things. Like in the waste example, what I gave to my customer, I changed the bin size and frequency. Now, they didn't lose anything. They were not deprived of their, you know, waste pickup services, but certain tweaks and changes helped them to, you know, save money. This exactly happens in most of the other categories. So cost savings doesn't mean that you need to cut certain things. You need to compromise on your quality. You can stay 100% absolutely what you're still doing right now and still be able to save money.
I've worked in the transition industry for 23 years there, Dinesh. I tell you, a lot of procurement people, they push price down and they come back and they say, well, it didn't work. Quality suffered. And they want to go back to a real price at some point. Now, not everybody is the same category. I get that. Some people it may have worked for them to push the price down. But the more they push the price down, the more the quality suffers in a lot of cases. So, and that's why my question is, and the second question is for me, because it's a localization fireside chat. Have you looked at the localization industry? Have you ever came across cost savings involving the localization industry? And have you dealt with that or?
No, I have not dealt with that. So this is something, you know, which I'm definitely open to look at it. There is an opportunity, but so far I am not.
Schooley Mitchell in general, not personally for you, but Schooley Mitchell in general, have they looked at localization industry in general? Like have you heard of it? 35,000 cases that you guys have dealt with?
I have at least not heard about it. Maybe I can check with my team members.
Yeah,
but
it'd be good to check because, you know, Schooley Mitchell is in the cost optimization industry. I mean, one of the biggest industries, well, one of the industry that is being talked about quite often now with AI and a variety of other things is the localization industry and technologies, you know, impacting the industry quite often, quite a bit. And resulting of that is optimization of cost, optimization of acquiring of the service, etc. And that's why I asked That's why I asked the question. There's a possibility there for Schooley and Mitchell to figure out a way to at least take a look at the industry. There's any possibility there.
Sure. We are industry agnostic. Like, not one particular industry doesn't need us. Everybody needs us, right? I can talk about, like, we have done work for not-for-profits. We have done work in healthcare. We have done work for municipalities, government organizations, government-funded organizations, manufacturing companies, logistics, even like independent, you know, pharmacy owners, restaurant owners, you know, you name it, we are there everywhere. That's the power. You know, we can, the model is so intuitive that we can replicate the success across any industries. You know, sometimes people ask, hey, I'm a different kind of an industry. Do you have any experience working with us? Sometimes, okay. Yes. Sometimes even if we're not, we can say, hey, look, cost is a cost. If you're having your telecom expenses, or you're having telecom expenses irrespective of whether you're a manufacturing company or a healthcare or a not-for-profit or an independent business owner, right? It's the same, right?
That goes everywhere,
so
right?
If I know how to save money in one place, in one category, I can easily replicate that model across, you know, different things, right? Now, there could be certain nuances, certain needs which I need to consider, which I will, but it's end of the day, a similar, you know, exercise which we can easily replicate across.
Now, for the money that you save, in your experience, what has the CEOs or the owners of these companies done with the money? What do they do with it?
I think many prudent CEOs and owners have invested that money back into, you know, strategic, you know, growth initiatives, and, you know, helped the businesses scale to much bigger heights. Think about what power of $100,000 or $300,000 can do, which they were already spending somewhere, and now they have it in their bank account, which they can put for, you know, increasing the impact what their businesses can bring. I know one product development company where we helped them save like $240,000 or something, and they used that to, you know, buy certain equipment for their R&D, which helped them to accelerate their product launch process. Now, people in product industries would understand how difficult it is if you have to accelerate certain things, how much money you need to, you know, pump it in to, you know, bring certain resources, right? Now, this is the power, you know, what this can do.
Now, let's talk a little bit about AI, because it's on everybody's mind on the channel here. So, okay, good. We're talking about cost savings. AI is involved in cost savings quite a bit. And everybody in the world nowadays, you know, according to every study you look around, they're talking about how much AI is saving money for large corporations. And so have you dealt with AI on the cost saving side? And what was the results of that?
See, again, this is a very, you know, sensitive thing. Many people are happy with using AI, but many people are also not happy with, you know, AI coming and, you know, doing, because your data is getting out everywhere. Now, what I can talk to you is AI can help you to analyze certain things. Now, if it takes a business owner 3 days to, you know, understand certain things, AI can help you to do it in, you know, few minutes or few hours. Let's say you want to, you know, bargain something, you need to talk to somebody, you need a human for a presence to, you know, just go and do that, right? Mm-hmm. AI can only give you certain framework, but AI will not understand, is this the right product for you, or is this the right fit for you, or what we are doing is the right result. That is very difficult, because an AI system is as good as what it is being trained for, right? It's all trained based on the data points. But let's say when I'm talking to vendors and, you know, doing certain things, the vendor asks certain questions, you know, which a human being can immediately assimilate, think, and respond. Whereas for an AI, it will be a generic answer, which may not be the right fit.
That's right. Now, have you dealt with AI in a situation where AI is creating a new waste in terms of spending? Example, tool sprawl, like many tools are being used, are doing the same thing, redundant subscriptions, shadow IT, there is a lot of that going on, and duplicate copilots. Have you ever scanned across an organization for those types of waste?
We don't, because as I said, our area of concentration is only 14 categories in Canada and 16 categories.
And AI is not part of it?
AI is not a part of it. So what we look at is basically telecom bills, which includes your landline, wireless, internet. We look at your waste pickup. We look at your credit card processing environment. We look at small package shipping.
Yeah, LTE. Typical hardcore kind of business tools that you need to run your business.
Exactly. We look at SaaS, but in SaaS, we look at only your licenses, what you pay for Microsoft, Adobe, Google Workspace, and things like that. So we don't get into, you know, other nitty-gritties and nuances of the business, which could benefit by, you know, implementing an AI tool or what that can bring.
Yeah.
We are evolving. We started with one category 25 years ago, and now we are 14 categories in Canada, 16 in the US. You never know. There could be, you know, new things coming up. Sure. You know, we are keep on investing on R&D, looking at new methodologies, looking at, you know, new categories to launch. Right now, I don't have. Maybe in the future, I don't know. Possibility.
Yeah. Now, if you were to design a modern cost stack for a new company, for somebody who's just asking for your help, let's say 200-person company, 200-people company, what tools and processes are non-negotiable that they absolutely must have?
See, first thing is they need to have a clear, SOP in place with a clear visibility in terms of, you know, what's coming and what's going out. And the second thing, what they need to have is like independency from people, because people come, people work, people leave, right? When people goes off, they should not, you know, be in a surprise situation where, was
John
happening.
Left us, but we don't know what happened after that.
Exactly. So they need to have a good repository of, you know, data and things on their background, which is people independent. Anybody would come in should be able to easily plug in and look at things and be able to quickly understand what's going on. So these are a couple of things I would say is very non-negotiable for companies.
Great. Now, as we, come to an end here, one of the things that probably the audience will be interested in is, can you give us three actions that the people can take a look at right now, look at their business and try to figure out what's working, what's not working? What is it that you would probably advise somebody right now? Take a look at what's going on in your book of business. These are three items that you probably should give them.
First thing is just go and look at your vendor contracts, because that will give you a lot of surprises. And then try to compare your vendor contracts with your invoices and see if it makes sense for you to, you know, what's going on. And the last one is just look at how long ago this contract was signed. If it is probably 2 years old, you are completely outdated now, and there is definitely an opportunity and you are leaving money on the table. So just these three things, I would say, would definitely give them a lot of surprises.
And what is the one belief about cost that you want to kill permanently?
I would say cost cutting is not about losing quality, but it's all about plugging leakages and eliminating inefficiencies.
And where can people get a hold of you? Where do they connect with you? How do they reach out to you if they're interested after this conversation?
Yeah, sure. I mean, all it takes is just a 15 minutes, conversation. I can just, connect with them and find out, scope out. And if there is a scope, we can proceed. Otherwise, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely give my contact details. And I would also like to reiterate, I just need only three things from them for me to, look at it. If they have a copy of the contract, if they have a contract with the vendor, a copy of the contract, last 3 months invoices, and probably an authorization letter so that we can talk on their behalf to their vendor. Now, how people can reach me? My LinkedIn is there. Just search Dinesh Moneysaver. You'll be able to find. My email address would be in the link, and my contact phone number is there on the link. So people can reach out, and I would be happy to have a quick conversation and, help you save or optimize their expenses.
Absolutely. And for the audience, if you're interested in connecting with Dinesh and you can't find him, just send me a little note. I will do the introduction for you. Happy to do that. Facilitate an introduction to Dinesh if you're interested in talking to him about cost savings, which I'm assuming everybody should be interested in cost savings. It's a great conversation to have. On the opposite end of the spectrum, if you're interested in revenue generation, you may want to give me a call. Dinesh and I, we didn't talk about that in this podcast, but maybe that's a subject for another podcast. We sit on the opposite end of the spectrum. So he is involved in cost savings and I am involved in revenue generation. So if any of those two conversations are of interest to you, feel free to reach out to any of us and we'll be happy to do an introduction. Dinesh? Any last comments before I wrap up the recording?
I would say thank you so much for this opportunity, for bringing me in and helping me, enlighten your audience about, what is cost savings is all about, and how we can add value, and also, bringing knowledge to them about, what Schooley Mitchell can do, because many people don't know us, and it's a good opportunity to, showcase what value we have brought in. So 25-year-old company, 35,000 customers, $1 billion, more than $1 billion in recorded savings. And we do it in a risk-free way for your business. So that's the power, what we can bring it to you guys. And thank you so much, Robin, for this opportunity.
Absolutely. Dinesh, I want to thank you for coming in and recording this podcast with me. You're welcome to come back anytime. The door is always open for you. And for the audience, I want to thank you so much for helping me on this channel. And thank you for listening in. If you're coming in on YouTube, thanks so much for watching us. If you're coming in on the podcast streaming platforms, thank you so much for downloading our episode. We're averaging about 1,200 downloads per day now. Proud of that. When I started the channel, I was hoping for 2 downloads per day. So who knows where this thing's going to go? 2.5 million view per day, and it's growing. And thanks so much for being part of the network. I really appreciate it. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys at the next episode. Dinesh, thanks again. Thanks for being part of this.
Okay.